I just don't have time to get a lot of input every day. I'm Joseph. This is Input English. For those of you joining us for the first time, this channel, Input English, was created to provide comprehensible input to people all over the world who want to improve their listening comprehension and their speaking ability in English. Comprehensible input is arguably the best way to learn the English language. If you're new to comprehensible input, this channel has a bunch of videos that explains the practical matters of using comprehensible input to improve your language skills. It's a scientifically solid program, and evidence that it works dates back nearly 50 years. In today's episode, I'd like to address the problem that there are only so many hours in the day, and when we use comprehensible input, it is admittedly a time-consuming process. There's no quick way to do this. Now, if you go onto the internet and you search how to learn English, you will find sites and videos that tell you that you can become fluent in 30 days with no effort. But it doesn't work. That's a lie. In reality, to improve one's English using comprehensible input, we're talking about hundreds and perhaps thousands of hours. But it's worth it. It's well worth it. If we accept comprehensible input as a solid way to get what you want, then the question is, how do we fit it into your schedule? Well, one of the ways to do that we've talked about, and that is to use discretionary time watching videos to watch videos like this, input videos that give you the added benefit that you are improving your English from watching videos. But the problem with videos is you can't do that in all locations where you find yourself. For instance, if you're driving a car or riding a bicycle, you can't use a video. Early in our language learning journey, videos are easier for us to understand than just audio tracks. After we have more experience with the language and our listening comprehension has improved, because we received a lot of input from videos like this, then we can move to audio-only input. Now, the benefit to you for using audio-only input is you can take advantage of travel time, for instance, and thus find more available time during your day to obtain input. People also get input when they're taking walks or when they're doing repetitious activities like doing the dishes or mowing the lawn, things that don't require you to use much concentration. You're just doing repetitious things. That is an ideal time to play audio input tracks on a headset, a device for listening. The other advantage of audio tracks only is you can use audiobooks. So an audiobook in my world is a triple threat. What's that? Well, it's a slang term. A triple threat means that this thing that we're talking about and calling a triple threat accomplishes three things. So an audiobook, for me, in Spanish, for instance, gives me the literature, the enjoyment of fine literature. It gives me the entertainment value, and it gives me the language learning. So for you, if you get a good audiobook that is at a level where you can understand the story, and you play an audiobook, then that is a triple threat. If you choose a great work of literature, and if you enjoy that literature, and then if you get a lot of input in English and improve your language skills, then that's a triple threat. And that's an ideal choice for input. As you may know, this channel includes a variety of types of input. I tell stories. I tell stories about my family, but I also tell stories about a fictitious family and their fictitious friends and all the trouble they get into. I create episodes based on just discussions of interesting topics, and I take you on adventures out in the world. As spring unfolds before our eyes, you can be sure you're going to be able to see some interesting places, because I have a long list of places I'm going to go with the camera to take you along for the ride. In yesterday's episode, I showcased two sources of public domain books that you can download for free. I specifically mentioned the Project Gutenberg, and I also mentioned Owl Eyes. These two sites are free, they're online, and you can download files and read great books for no cost. Now, today I'm going to disclose another source, but this is not for text files that you would read. This is for MP3 audio files that you can listen to. You can read audiobooks for free. The website is called LibriVox.org. LibriVox, if you translate that from Latin roots, Libra is of or pertaining to books, and Vox is voice. So it makes sense, LibriVox. LibriVox is a volunteer organization. Their mission is to provide audio access to literature, and the books that they provide are in the public domain. Their recordings are also in the public domain. Their readers are volunteer readers. Most of the readers I have heard on LibriVox recordings are excellent. I'll put a link in the description, but it's LibriVox.org. I am told that LibriVox has a cooperative arrangement with the Project Gutenberg, and this is where they get a lot of their text to be read by the volunteers. So what could you do with a LibriVox recording? Well, one of the things you could do with a mobile device is you could just stream the audio and listen to it on your mobile device from their website. You can play it from their website. That's one option. Another is you can download it and use your mobile device to play the MP3 files. A third thing you could do, if you subscribe to Linq.com, that's Linq.com, that app allows you to download into your app MP3 files. And if you download MP3 files into your Linq app, there's an option that Linq will generate an automatic transcript. So you can listen to it using the Linq app, but you can also follow along if you're sitting someplace and you are able to read it. You could follow along with a transcript. Now, this is an automatic transcript done by an AI. It is not a human transcript edited for perfection. But for most people's purposes, the automatic transcript will be perfectly adequate for their purposes. Now, what kind of trouble could we get into if you are reading great literature with audiobooks, or any books, really, for that matter? What kind of mischief can you get into? If you're reading American literature, you may run into dialogue that includes some contractions or slang expressions that would be difficult to understand. And so one of the things I'd like to do today is give you a quick overview of the common contractions in American literature that characters may use in their dialogues. And once you know what these words mean, you can recognize them. Now, these are not words I want you to learn and fold into your speaking language. Some of these words are grammatically incorrect and are not something you'd want to duplicate. But if a character in a book uses a term and you have no idea what that term means, then that's going to decrease your satisfaction with the book. It's going to decrease your understanding of the story, perhaps. It may make that book less useful to you as input. But if you understand these few words and you can recognize them either when you hear them or see them on the page, like so many things, you can just notice them. Do not study these words. The first word to mention in this category is ain't. So when I was growing up, I was told by my parents, never use the word ain't. Spelled A-I-N apostrophe T. So it's a contraction. It's a contraction of am not, are not, is not. It's a negative. That N apostrophe T stands for not. So it's a negative verb. And I was taught ain't is not a word. Or another way of saying is ain't a word. You will see it in literature. And once you know what it means, you can just move on. The rest of these are just contractions. It's just a matter of setting your expectations so that when you hear them, you know what they mean. The first one is coulda. That means could have. It's actually one of three funny contractions that you will hear. Coulda, woulda, shoulda. So could have, would have, should have. And you will actually hear people occasionally, when there's a missed opportunity, just give you a response, well, coulda, woulda, shoulda. And if you hear somebody say, coulda, woulda, shoulda, that just means there was a missed opportunity. They failed. Most of the rest of these are in the same pattern. Gonna. Going to. Wanna. Want to. Wanna. You want to go to the store? You may see that in writing. You may hear it in speech. And if somebody asks you, you want to go to the store, they are trying to express the question, do you want to go to the store? Have to. I have to stay late after work. I have to work late. Have to. That means have to. They swap the V sound for an F sound, and from have to, it becomes have to. So I have to stay late after work. You'll hear that. The next one is kinda. The weather outside is kind of cool. Kind of. Similar to. Sort of. You might hear someone say sorta. Sorta and kinda are about the same thing. The next one is oughta. Ought to. I should do the dishes. Or I could say, I should have done the dishes. Or you could say, I ought to do the dishes. Shoulda is used for a past event, and oughta is for a current event. The last two are fun, and that is y'all and all y'all. Now, this varies depending where you are. I think a lot of people, when they hear the term y'all, they assume that they're talking to somebody from the Deep South. And that's not necessarily true. You may be dealing with a Southerner using that term. It's commonly used there. But it could be any place in the country. Y'all, spelled Y apostrophe A-L-L, is a contraction of you all. So it's a plural. Well, it's not quite that simple. So if you are talking to two people and you want to refer to both of them, you could say y'all and mean them both. But in many settings, the speaker is talking to one person and they still say y'all. One place where I've been, they told me, since I was not from that area, one of the locals explained to me that in his world, y'all was single and all y'all was plural. Now, that's not something I want you to learn, but that's what I was taught by a local guy who was trying to make sense out of the local behavior. In my mind, y'all and all y'all are really the same thing. And when they say all y'all, they are emphasizing that it's a plural. It's an emphasis. So what's the take-home message from this? Well, I'm trying to give you some weaponry here, some tools, so that when you run into these terms in spoken language or in written language, you can recognize them and just move on, because your goal is to get more input, not stumble and fall because you've tripped over one of these words. I do not counsel you to learn these words so that you will start using them, because every last one of these words is grammatically incorrect. There's not one word we reviewed today, not one expression that is proper English. But they're in the literature that you're likely to be reading. I'm currently reading a book and evaluating whether I'm going to recommend it to you. By now, you probably know that I don't just go to the internet, get a synopsis of something based on an AI's opinion, and then broadcast that to you as information. No, no, no. If I recommend a book on this channel, that means I've read it recently, and I understand it, and I've made decisions about the suitability of using that book for input. It's not that I'm restricting what you have access to. What I'm restricting is what I recommend. So I'm now well into this book. I've seen some phraseology like these contractions, and I have to make a decision as to whether it seems like a good idea. I suspect that it will be. But we'll talk about that on another day. Don't lose any sleep over these words. These are just terms you're going to run into. Don't learn them. Just recognize them. I invite comments below. And if you like videos like this, be sure to click on this one next. See you soon.